They collaborate. From this collaboration in the food quest, perhaps more complex social organization develops. At the same time, they become more interdependent. There is a greater volume of exchange of foodstuffs and luxuries, much of it in the hands of more entrepreneurial people, perhaps kin leaders, whoever, who inevitably began to rise to the top of a somewhat elementary social pyramid. And, of course, great improvements were made in storage technology. Because, as you know, farming is rather like a savings account at a bank. You either make it grow or you deplete it. And the combination of these innovations helped alleviate food shortages. But, inevitably, people were living in the same places for much longer periods of time. So, again, here as they did in the Southwest, in Mexico and many other places, they turned to the deliberate cultivation of local plants to increase natural supplies. They turned to native grasses, goosefoot, March elder. They turned to gourds and they turned to sunflowers. And these were being cultivated in many places as early as 2500 BC. But everywhere, this cultivation was a supplement to a hunter-gatherer diet. And this lasted for centuries, because this hunter-gatherer society, based as it was in very fertile river valleys with migrating waterfowl and fish, didn't need that much extra food. So much so, that for many centuries, this sideline agriculture supported, as well as hunting and gathering, major social changes, including elaborate burial rituals and huge earthworks, which we'll describe in Lecture 31. And then, inevitably, maize and bean agriculture spread across the southern plains, into the Midwest and Southeast, between AD 450 and 800, during early medieval times in Europe. This was a new sort of farming, more demanding. It required intensive labor on heavy river soils and resulted in the transformation not only of the landscape, but of society. This wasn't supplementary agriculture. This involved land clearance, collaboration of a lot of people, forests being felled, and the complete transformation of river floodplains, the result being that, in many cases, the wild stands of foods vanished in the face of much more organized agriculture. And with the transformation of the landscape and the economy came completely new societies, which were based on the traditional beliefs of earlier times and culminated in the appearance of elaborate chiefdoms, described in Lecture 31, the Mississippian chiefdoms, which were at their peak just before the Spanish arrived in North America. Everywhere maize took hold on a large scale, society became more elaborate, society became more sedentary, social organization became more complex, and long-distance exchange assumed great importance. Maize spread as far north as the St. Lawrence Valley and was an underpinning of Iroquois society. The only places where it really didn't take hold were the Arctic North and the West, the Desert West and the Coastal West, where complex hunter-gatherer societies survived until European contact. In this lecture, we've described the origins of food production in the Americas, and especially the story of maize. We've surveyed the main crops and animals domesticated by ancient Native Americans and described three areas where domestication began. Our main focus has been maize, which originated from the wild grass Teosinte. We concluded it was first domesticated in southwestern Mesoamerica. We described the spread of maize into North America and into the western woodlands, and we've shown how in both these areas the new crop was the foundation for more elaborate societies. Maize was the staff of life, and now we've looked at agriculture, the staff of life. It is time in part four to look at the world's earliest civilizations.